your next great vacation might be something you've never even considered. A private yacht in a beautiful location just for you and your closest friends and family. Explore the beaches of the Virgin Islands, the ancient shores of Greece, or the tropical paradise of Tahiti. This is not a cruise. This is a yacht charter vacation with The Moorings. And it's easier than you think. With hundreds of award-winning yachts to choose from, located in over 20 beautiful sailing destinations, the world is in your hands. Whether you're an experienced boater or looking for a more genuine once-in-a-lifetime vacation, The Moorings can make your dream a reality. Call us today and start your journey to your next great escape. Your private yacht awaits at moorings.com.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
Did you know one of the few things that Nostradamus correctly predicted was his own death? Did you know that only one professional baseball player has been killed while playing the game? What about the fact that one of the most poignant last words ever were spoken by a parrot? Each week on Famous Last Words, we'll examine some of the final thoughts of some of the most fascinating people in history. From presidents to murderesses, from business innovators to teen pop icons. That's Famous Last Words, part of the Darkcast Network, available right now wherever you get your podcasts.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
Frequency.
Thank you for tuning in. A big city cabbie gets his fair share of mysteries on the graveyard shift. Today's episode, the 1992 series, Midnight Cab, created by James W. Nicole. Another unique take on the mystery genre, and one that's very enjoyable. So I would definitely check out Volume 1 in the archives as well. But let me know how you enjoy this series. Through the comments on Spotify, through my email or social media, links in the description. If you enjoy this podcast, please follow, review, and rate. The higher the rating, the more easier it is for people to find this podcast and enjoy these great stories. And to all of the people that have followed me, a big thank you. And with all that, please enjoy the show.
October 3rd, 1991. I can remember when they put the first stoplight on the main street in Big River. Everybody complained it backed up traffic too much. Around 5 o'clock on a Friday night, there could be as many as 5 cars waiting for the light to change. When I was a kid, I like to sit on my bike beside the Optimist bench downtown and listen to the old-timers, like Andy McAndrew and Rollie Miles and Jake Bresseau with only one hand.
A man could die breathing all these exhaust fumes.
Funny how life works out.
Walker.
Hey, Krista.
Where are you?
Young and Gerard. It's like a circus down here.
Hey, it's Friday night.
Yeah.
Are you homesick, Walker?
Nope.
Corner at Dundas and Sherburne. A guy will be standing there.
Doing what?
God knows.
Actually, there were only two places you could be in Big River at 12:45. At home or not at home. Every kid knew that. Either you waited in your bed for the sound of your father to finally open the door, bang around downstairs, and stagger off to bed, or he was already home. That was the difference.
How are you tonight, sunshine?
I'm okay. Yeah, you call a cab. I had a pickup.
Yeah, I called it. Drive up the street, sunshine. Until I tell you to stop.
You get all kinds. This was one of them. I looked in the mirror. He was looking back at me, smiling. A big man with a horse face and bright eyes, big horse teeth and small horse ears. I thought to myself, this is the night I get killed. I could see it in the paper. Cabbie murdered, throat slit, mother furious. I told him not to go to the city, she said.
Anywhere in particular?
No. So, you're one of Piatelli's drivers, eh?
Yeah, you know him. He's a great guy, Mr. Piatelli. Yeah, I have to get used to his joking, that's all. At first, I didn't know whether he was mad at me or what, because he was always gearing me around. But then I got used to him, and I figured, well...
Shut up.
What?
You heard me.
Right.
You see this here?
Yeah.
Give it to my friend, Alfonso. Tell him a special delivery for the angel. Pull over. How old are you?
19.
What's your name?
Walker.
Yeah? Maybe you and me, we could have breakfast together sometime.
He smiled a weird smile at me like Hannibal the Cannibal or somebody and got out. Once in a while, you pick up a fare. When they're gone, you want to roll down all the windows. With this guy, I wanted to get out of the cab myself and set it on fire.
Mr. Piatelli, special delivery.
Hey, what's this?
A friend of yours. He told me to give it to you.
Oh, yeah? Money?
I don't know.
What friend?
He didn't say. He just handed me that envelope. He wasn't going anywhere in particular.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
What is it, Mr. Piatelli?
Who gave you this?
He didn't say. He was a big guy. He said it was a special delivery for the angel.
Oh, Mother Mary, all the saints in heaven, oh, God.
Mr. Piatelli wasn't looking all that well, but he moved his 300 pounds faster than I had ever seen him move before. Straight up the wooden flight of stairs over the garage floor to his apartment, opened the heavy green metal door, and slammed it shut. He stayed up there for 3 days. Well, that's what we all thought. Nobody saw him.
Go up there.
Oh, geez, I don't know.
Go up there.
What good would it do? Everybody's been knocking on his door for 2 days, even his bookie. He didn't come out for his bookie. He's not going to come out for...
I don't mean that. I mean get in somehow. Break in if you have to.
Oh, geez. Maybe he just wants some privacy.
Walker, are you stupid or what? It's been 3 days.
Well,
you saw what he was like. I'm going to call 911.
Okay, I'll go up. I'll go.
What's the matter anyway? You've been running around helping other people out. Now someone you actually know is in trouble.
Well, he's a guy. It's his place. It's his business. If he wanted help, he would...
What? So if he were a woman, it'd be different?
Yeah.
You know something?
What?
That's so dumb. Now, would you get up there?
The thing about Krista, you never have to wonder what she's thinking. Krista. She's about 100 pounds, maybe. Sits in her wheelchair on a kind of angle, looking sweet and fragile. Till you get to know her. I knocked on both doors. The one in the garage and the one in the back of the building that once used to lead to a rusty old fire escape but now opened up on midair in a 2-story drop. No answer. So I stood on top of the ladder in the dark, wrapped an oily rag around my hand, and punched in the back door window.
Hello? Mr. Piattelli? Are you in there? Mr. Piattelli? Mr. Piattelli?
No 300 pounds of enraged Piattelli. Nothing. Just really, eerily, silent. What does the apartment of a man who drives a 1959 pink Cadillac and wears four gold chains around his neck look like? I expected, I don't know, a television that covered one wall, a well-stocked bar with leather stools, shag carpeting maybe, a bedroom decorated in black and silver with a circular bed and a mirror on the ceiling, and pink lights somehow, pink lights. It didn't look like that at all. The outside door opened into the kitchen and it was bright and clean. Tidy. His office downstairs was a mess. Maybe there were two Piattellis.
Hello?
There were heavy curtains across the window in the living room and massive furniture sitting in the gloom that looked old and polished and plush. But that's not what caught my eye. What caught my eye were the shelves and the walls. Rows and rows of shelves, and sitting on the shelves, staring back at me, glowing palely in the dark. Rows and rows of dolls. Beautiful china dolls, looking very old in yellowing costumes. A few miniature baby buggies made of wicker, and children's toys made out of tin. Mr. Piattelli was a doll collector. I looked into the bedroom, switched on the light. A few clothes were strewn over the bed, as if he had sorted through some things, packing in a hurry, and beside the bed, on an old worn rug that looked to me like it came from India, a piece of a photograph. I picked it up, some older woman's face squinting into the sun. I looked in the wastebasket, inside it the crumpled envelope I had given to Mr. Piattelli from the guy in the cab, and more pieces of the photograph. I fitted them together. The woman was standing in a backyard beside an old wooden fence. Two young boys were standing beside her, one maybe 18, the other 12. They had their arms around her, their mother probably. There was an alley behind them, a tangle of telephone poles and wires. The woman had an apron on. It was blowing a little in the wind. They all looked happy.
But his car's still here. It's parked right outside. He never goes anywhere without that pink Cadillac. It's famous.
Maybe that's why.
But no one saw him leave.
Well, that's possible. He could have gone out the other way through that room where they play poker and out the side.
So, what's it like up there, Walker?
Well, it's different.
Yeah? So, like what? Walker?
Well, he collects dolls.
What? What kind of dolls?
Doll dolls, you know, like little girl dolls, but old ones, antiques. He's a doll collector.
Alfonso Piattelli collects dolls?
Yeah.
Come on, Walker. I've known him since I was three.
No, really. And his place, it's nice. Old furniture, too, like they've been made by craftsmen. He likes old stuff.
Alfonso Piattelli? Why didn't he tell me he liked dolls?
I don't know. Maybe he thought you'd laugh. I know you wouldn't, but maybe he thought you would, you know?
Stupid Stoop. Where is he anyway? What's wrong with him? Walker.
I showed Krista the piece together photograph. It didn't mean anything to her either, a mother, two sons. It looked old somehow, maybe the late 50s, the clothes, the leaning old telephone poles, the photograph itself. Before the 60s, anyway, the oldest boy had sideburns, and his hair was combed up in two greasy rolls that met and fell over the middle of his forehead, and huge ears. Mr. Piattelli has big ears.
It's right in here. I make up 12 post-dated checks every September the 1st.
How about a brother?
Never mentioned one to me. Okay, here's his mother's file. Loretta Sophia Piattelli. Talks about her a lot. He calls her Mama.
That explains the dolls.
Walker, what do you call your mother?
Geronimo.
Really?
Well, not to her face. It was just between me and my sisters.
Oh? How many sisters?
Six of them.
Oh? Well, that explains a lot about you, too.
What do you mean?
Well, nothing.
Oh, come on. What do you mean?
Sometimes Krista can be a giant pain, especially when she gets that look on her face, like she knows something you don't, even though she doesn't, though you're not sure and she won't say anything more so you can prove it, and it drives you crazy. I know that look. I grew up with that look. It drives you crazy.
Yes, Mr. Devereaux, Mrs. Pietelli has been a resident of ours for many years, but I'm afraid I can't let you see her.
Oh, why not?
I'm afraid I'm not at liberty to tell you why not. Are you a relative?
No, I work for her son, Alfonso Pietelli.
Yes?
And, we haven't seen him for a few days, and the bunch of us were worried. He went away kind of abruptly, and I thought maybe his mother might know something about it.
Well, Mrs. Pietelli is not well. She hasn't been for some time. Now, I'm quite certain she wouldn't know the whereabouts of her son.
Oh. Well. If you see him, could you tell him to call the garage? Let someone know what's going on? Okay. Thanks.
Mr. Devereaux, I'll walk you to your car. A cab.
Like I said, I work for Mr. Pietelli. He was here, wasn't he? I mean, in the last couple of days.
How did you know that?
Because you didn't say he wasn't.
The truth is, I'm feeling somewhat concerned about Mr. Pietelli myself.
Well, and if you can help him.
He was terribly agitated when he arrived here. He gave me strict instructions that absolutely no one was to be allowed in to see his mother. He wanted to hire a security service for her. Well, I told him we could hardly allow that. So he settled for a 24-hour nursing service so that someone would be at her bedside at all times.
Why?
He wouldn't say. But that's not the worst of it. When I walked him back to the parking lot, there was something smeared across his windshield. It was blood, Mr. Devereaux.
What did Mr. Pietelli do?
Nothing. At first, I thought he was going to faint. He leaned on the car, and then he said, some damn kids must be playing a joke. Fake blood. And then he laughed. But it was rather a ghastly laugh. I brought him some water and a rag, and he washed it off, made me swear to look after his mother, and then he drove away. I know blood when I see it, Mr. Devereaux. Perhaps it was animal blood. I don't know. But it was blood.
It was almost dark by the time I arrived back at the garage. I took a walk around the back of the building. I thought I might have another look through Mr. Pietelli's apartment, not really sure what I was looking for. What could be more ordinary than a couple of kids and their mother happy together in their own backyard? Alfonso and his mama, Loretta, and... who? A younger brother?
I'm calling the cops.
Oh, what for?
Well, for one thing, there's been a B&E right over our heads.
Well, that's not all. Whoever it was, he sat the dolls in a circle on the floor. All their faces and eyes methodically broken, and he sprinkled blood on them.
That does it!
Krista, wait.
What for?
Because Mr. Pietelli didn't call the cops himself, and because I think we've still got time. If this guy wanted to get Mr. Pietelli, he could have got him here at the garage or at the nursing home. He was there, too. But he didn't. Because something else is going on.
Like what?
Like... I don't know yet.
Terrific.
But Mr. Pietelli does know. If we could find him, maybe we could help him out. He's scared.
I'm scared. You'd be scared, too, if you were normal.
Where would he go if he wanted to hide out?
I don't know.
Well, think about it, okay?
Okay.
Does he own a cottage?
No.
Someplace out of town?
No.
Some relative somewhere?
Well, of course he has relatives somewhere. Everybody has relatives somewhere. He owns some places in town.
He does?
Yeah. He owns a row house and a couple of detached ones around Queen and Broadview. But he rents them out. I enter the rent checks every month.
Oh.
Walker, one of those places, there's some young guys in it. They were about 3 months behind in their rent. Alfonso said he was going to kick them out. They were wrecking the place, he said.
Then it could be empty now.
It is empty.
I parked the car about 3 blocks away from the address Krista had given me, in case I was being followed. Sat in the cab for a while, rolled a smoke, stuck in a tape, and watched. It was about 1 in the morning. Somebody's father staggered by, wending his slow, crooked way home. That was about it. No parked car lurking in the shadows behind me. I got out. Mr. Piattelli, are you in there? It's me, Walker. Mr. Piattelli? Mr. Piattelli! I stood on the back stoop of the house Mr. Piattelli owned. The skeleton of what had once been a truck was sitting in the backyard. The grass was almost up to my waist. Mr. Piattelli? The door opened slowly, very slowly. Then this large, white hand floated out of the darkness towards me. It was large enough to be attached to 300 pounds. Suddenly, the hand had me by the shirt and jerked me in through the door like a minnow being jerked out of a fish pond.
Walker?
Yeah, it's me. It's me. Turn on the light.
What, are you crazy? I ain't turning on this light for nobody.
A bulky shadow moving down a hallway. I followed him. There was a faint glow at the end of the hall. Mr. Piattelli turned into our room.
Come in here. Don't say nothing. Just shut up.
He had nailed some canvas drop sheets over the windows. There was a painter's scaffold and a couple of buckets of paint. A candle burning, the stubs of several others, pizza boxes, beer cans, cigarette butts, and graffiti all over the 2 walls that hadn't been painted.
You see this? I'm a hunted animal, that's what I am. How'd you get here?
Drove the cab.
Well, park my bloody cab in front of this house, I'll kill you.
No, I didn't. It's a few blocks away. I was careful. Nobody followed me.
Yeah, you hope. I hope.
Then Mr. Piattelli raised up his hand. There was a revolver in it the size of a suitcase.
He comes in here, he's a dead man. I mean, that's all there is to it, a dead man. How'd you find me?
Krista.
Yeah, of course, Krista. What about?
She's really worried, Mr. Piattelli. We're all worried. Whatever's wrong, we want to help.
Yeah? If he hurts Mama, what'll I do? What'll I do?
Oh, she's all right. I was there this afternoon.
No kidding. Oh, that's good. I mean, that's good.
Mr. Piattelli, I think we've got some time to sort things out. He was just threatening. That photograph, the blood on the windshield, the dolls.
The what?
Oh. Somebody got into your apartment. I think it was the same guy. He broke your dolls. Mr. Piattelli looked at me, his face as large and white as the moon.
You saw my dolls?
Yeah. They're terrific. It's a great collection. It must have taken you years to, you know, collect. I think they're great. And the toys and things. He broke their heads. Mr. Piattelli just stared at me for a moment. Then suddenly he turned away. One huge, meaty hand began to rub away at his eye. He kept his face turned for a long while. I didn't know what to do.
Maybe you'll be able to fix them.
35 years. Collection takes me 35 years. The first one, my little sister's. She died of scarlet fever. 4 years old. So I kept it. Then I just started to buy things, you know, toys, things. The more I bought, the more I got interested in their history, stuff like that, you know? You understand?
Sure.
Yeah, I could be collecting cars, anything. So he trashed them, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. Piattelli, that photograph of you and your mother, who else is in it? The younger guy.
What are you crazy? That's not me, that's not my mother, that's him, for God's sake, his mother.
Whose?
I'm going to need somebody on the outside. I need a go-between. How about it, Walker? Could you do that for me?
Yeah, I could.
Okay. Hogan. It's Mouse Hogan. His mother is his younger brother. We all grew up in the neighborhood. This one. This was my old home. My mama's home. We had a gang, you know, a bunch of kids. It was Mouse's gang. I wasn't really in it, but I had to be in it. You understand? I mean, you're in or they kill you. I mean, that's how you think when you're a kid, right? Mouse called me Angel because he knew I didn't like what was going on. Oh, you couldn't call him Mouse, though. You know, big ears.
Big ears?
Yeah. Mickey Mouse behind his back. He was mean, though. He was crazy mean. He was nuts. We used to hang around the hotels and parks, you know, roll drunks. One night, we're emptying out this wino's pockets. He wakes up and he grabs the mouse. And the guy's as strong as a bear. You'd never believe it. So we're kids. We run. Now, he smashes Mouse's face into a wall and bloodies him up a little. Later that night, I'm laying up on the roof. I mean, it's so hot. And I see the mouse. He's climbing over the backyard fence. He's got something in his hand. Out of curiosity, I follow him. He walks through the park. He finds the same guy. Oh, he's passed out good now. He's sleeping on the grass. Mouse stands over him. He looks around. Oh, I can still see his face. His face, it looks weird, like he's high on something. And then he pours stuff out of the can he has in his hands all over the guy, from his head to his feet. And the guy begins to stir. He sits up. Mouse lights a match, and the guy just explodes. I mean, it lights up the whole park. This guy, he never even made it to his knees. He just rolls a little, and he lies still. You know, Mouse disappears. And me, I run too. And the cops come around. They question everybody in the neighborhood. And I can't stand it. What I saw. So I tell them. I have to go to court. You know, the whole thing. Mouse is 19. They send him away. Manslaughter. 20 years. 12 certain. And one night, his mother, she takes an overdose of pills. Kills herself. It's him in that photograph. His mama, his brother. This is what he gives me. This is what he's telling me.
So the guy in the cab...
It's Hogan. Every year, every Christmas, that maniac sends me a card from prison to the Angel. He kills some guy in a riot. More years, more cards. I wait for them like a knife in the gut. And this year... No card. He's out.
Mr. Piattelli.
Listen, I leave here. I'm a dead man. You do something for me, okay? His brother, Terry, he's a gambler. I know the guy. He's okay. He's in his right mind. I'll send you to him, all right? You tell him what's going on. Maybe Terry can stop it.
What's that?
What? Shh, that.
I don't hear... Mr. Piattelli put one hand up and bent over at the waist, cocking his ear towards the hall. We both stood frozen for a moment, straining to hear. Mr. Piattelli crept out of the room, his revolver leading the way, and began to move silently down the hallway towards the dark kitchen. I followed him, his huge bulk moving silently through the gloom. Then he stopped. It was coming from outside, by the door. Mr. Piattelli took one more step into the kitchen. Suddenly, there was a shadow at the kitchen window behind the curtains. A face, then pointed ears, an arching back. Tail.
Ah! I'm going to go nuts. Oh, God, that's what's happening. I'm going nuts in here.
Mr. Piattelli, listen. I'll be your go-between, I promise, but just let me make one call first.
Yeah? To who?
To the police.
AP cap. Okay. 290 Duncan, right? Apartment? Okay. Eddie, you there? Where are you now? Good. 290 Duncan, side door. Yeah.
Hi, Krista. How's Mr. Piattelli?
Okay, I guess. He's trying to glue his dolls back together. Oh. I'm supposed to be helping. Look at all these broken heads.
At least he's not hiding them in his apartment like they're... something to be ashamed of.
Yeah. I still don't understand why he didn't just call the cops.
I don't know. He called them once, a long time ago. It cost him a lot, I think. funny. How people seem to be and how they really are inside, eh?
Right. Yeah. Anyway, that guy, that crazy guy, how'd you know that he wasn't Mouse Hogan?
Ears.
Ears?
Ears. The guy in the cab had little horse ears. Hogan's ears stick out like sails. You could see it in the photograph. Ears don't change much, do they?
Guess not. But there could have been two of them, the guy in the cab and Hogan.
And I just figured, what do killers do? They might catch you first, then try to scare you, but they don't scare you first, then try to catch you. Didn't make sense. So, that's why I called Inspector Kiss. He checked. Mouse Hogan died peacefully in prison last November.
And the guy in the cab?
A prison buddy of Hogan's. He knew the story. When he got out this summer, he went straight to Hogan's young brother, Terry. They cooked it up between them. After I talked to Inspector Kiss, he wanted me to meet with Terry Hogan, so I did. And Hogan said,
yeah, I could call off my brother. Cost Piatelli $200,000.
He wanted cash. Now, he even gave me an account number for Mr. Piatelli to wire the money into.
A scam.
I think Mr. Piatelli would have gone for it, too.
So now what happens?
Nothing. Mr. Piatelli called Terry. They had a long talk. Then he told Inspector Kiss he wasn't going to press charges.
Hey, Walker, you got a big mouth too, eh? You got nothing to do, the two of you?
Yeah, I'm fixing your dolls.
Yeah, well, here's some more pieces. Goes with this one. What are you looking at?
Nothing.
Aren't you supposed to be driving a cab or something?
Too early.
Hey, Alfonso. Why didn't you charge them? They were scamming you.
Yeah, well, like I said to Terry, you know, a lot of years, the Piatellis and the Hogans, now we're even. And now it's over.
You have just heard Midnight Cab, Episode 3, The Mystery of the Horse-Faced Man, written by James W. Nichol. Featured in the cast were David Ferry as Walker and Jacqueline Samuda as Krista, with Howard Jerome as Mr. Piatelli. You heard Frank Moore as Whip, and the rest home manager was Dennis O'Connor. Music for this series is composed by Milan Kimlicka, and the series casting consultant is Linda Grierson. Our recording engineer is Joanne Anka, with sound effects by Matt Wilcott. The series production assistant is Nancy Dow. Midnight Cab is produced and directed in Toronto by Bill Howell.
Your next great vacation might be something you've never even considered. A private yacht in a beautiful location just for you and your closest friends and family. Explore the beaches of the Virgin Islands, the ancient shores of Greece, or the tropical paradise of Tahiti. This is not a cruise. This is a yacht charter vacation with the Moorings. And it's easier than you think. With hundreds of award-winning yachts to choose from, located in over 20 beautiful sailing destinations, the world is in your hands. Whether you're an experienced boater or looking for a more genuine once-in-a-lifetime vacation, the Moorings can make your dream a reality. Call us today and start your journey to your next great escape. Your private yacht awaits at moorings.com. If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water. Enjoy. and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to countrymd.com/energy. And order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's countrymd.com/energy.
Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
Yo, Krista, Harvard and Spadina.
Okay, 1253 Baptist, Department 4, going to the airport.
Right.
Boring, eh?
What do you mean?
If any more damsels in distress call, I'll let you know.
Krista? Oh, jeez. October 30th, 91. What's the difference between driving cab in the daytime or at night? Julie Swenson. If Eddie hadn't caught the flu, if I wasn't driving days to cover for him. Sometimes you think you got something handled, or at least behind you, and then somebody comes along and it all starts up again. Like how my father died.
Hi.
Oh. Hi.
I'm sorry. Did I wake you up?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I could...
No,
I could...
I'm on duty. It's okay. I'm working a double shift, like, all night and now today, because one of the guys is sick.
Are you sure it's okay?
Yeah. I turned and looked at her. At first, all I could see was eyes. She had one of those faces some girls have where you fall right into their eyes. Huge, dark eyes and a small, pretty mouth and white skin and... the eyes.
I'm going to, 472 Silver Birch Road. I've got it written down. It's supposed to be somewhere in Scarborough, or near Scarborough. I forget which.
Well, that's a clue. I'll look it up. If this was Big River, it'd be a snap. I'd turn left at the train station, go down to the big white house on the corner, take a left.
Oh?
But it's not, so, Silver Birch Avenue, Silver Birch Crescent, Silver Birch Road.
With the big wooden moose in the park, in the middle of town? That Big River?
You're kidding. Are you from... No, you're not from Big River. I know everybody.
I was.
You're kidding. Really? How could I miss you?
Oh, well, I was like small. 4 or 5, I think. I stayed with his family for about a year. I remember that moose.
Walter.
What?
That's his name.
Oh, right.
So, I mean, what family did you stay with?
Davidson, I think.
Joe Davidson on Harley Street.
And that's how it started. I drove her out to Silver Birch Road and she talked all the way. Because I was from home, I guess, or near home anyway. Northerners feel like Newfoundlanders when it comes to Southern Ontario, like being in a foreign country.
So I'm kind of scared.
Well, I'd be kind of scared, too.
Yeah. It took me over 3 years once I made up my mind to do it. They just keep bouncing you around from this agency to that one to this government department. I even had to hire a lawyer once. But I found out, and now I know everything. When I finally found out who she was and where she lived, mailing that letter, actually letting go of it and hearing it drop through the slot, that was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. Until now.
What'd you say? I mean, in the letter.
Oh, dear Mrs. Layton, don't faint or anything when you read this, but I'm your daughter. And a lot of other stuff. Everything I'd found out. When and where I was born. How I was put up for adoption in Thunder Bay, even though I was born in St. Catharines. Which is kind of strange, until you think about it. She was only 17 when I was born. And her father was like this prominent businessman in town. And I sent her a couple of photographs I had from when I was real small. And some more right up until now. I didn't do a guilt trip or anything. I don't feel she has anything to be guilty about. I had to work my way through all my feelings with this social worker before they'd even release any information at all.
What kind of feelings?
Oh, resentment, hostility stuff.
Oh.
I really didn't feel anything like that, but I had to talk about it as if I did, just to get by this person, you know?
Hmm.
Anyway, I wrote and told her that she was my birth mother, and that I would like very much to meet her if she felt okay about meeting me. And if she did, she should call me at this number.
And she did.
Yeah! And I thought I was going to die. My voice was shaking, and I started to cry, and she started to cry. It was great.
Julie, guess what?
What?
We're here. Silver Birch Road.
Oh, God.
Houses are nice.
Yeah.
Expensive. It's in this block.
Where? Can you wait?
What do you mean?
Wait for me, just in case?
I invited you.
Yeah?
It'll be okay.
What if she doesn't like me?
She will. I mean, I like you, and I'm just a cab driver.
No, you're not.
Well, I'm not just a cab driver, but I'm a cab driver. I'll wait until... It'll be okay.
Before she got out, I wrote my phone number down on that piece of paper with the address and handed it back to her. Just in case. Sometimes she didn't have anything better to do, you know. I waited 5 minutes. Julie stuck her head back out the front door, smiled, waved, and I drove off. That's that, I said to myself. She's gone.
Mm. Hello?
Walker?
Mm, yeah. Julie?
Hi.
Hi.
You sound... Did I wake you again?
Well,
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. No, I'm glad you woke me. So, how did it go?
Oh, it was great. Really. Like, it was really great.
Great. Where are you now?
Back at the hotel. I'm just gathering up my stuff. She's picking me up later.
That's good.
Yeah. Can I see you?
There were two places I figured I could take her. Either to this blues club on Queen Street that I found my third week in Toronto that's always crowded and noisy and weird, or this little restaurant near Bloor and Bathurst that's quiet and dark and romantic and cheap, or I could take her to both, in either order. When I saw her standing in the lobby of the hotel waiting for me, a beret perched on her head at an angle, her hands plunged into the pockets of her jacket, her face drawn, her eyes luminous, I knew. The restaurant.
This is nice.
Yeah. I hope you didn't mind riding the subway.
No, it was interesting.
I'm going to try to save up, you know, get a car, an old junker, probably, but anyway, wheels.
Sounds good.
It's the insurance. The insurance would kill you. $2,000 or something like that.
How old are you?
How old are you?
20.
Oh.
How old are you?
19. I'll be 20 in March.
So you're here all by yourself in a big city. Why?
Oh, just time to move on, I guess. Big river. It's small, but it's crowded, too. Mother, 6 sisters.
Really?
Really. 3 of them are married, so brother-in-law's 2. And they think they know everything, brother-in-law's, and nieces and nephews, and 3 sisters still at home. Crowded.
Sounds sort of nice to me.
Oh, do you smoke?
Yep.
I roll my own. You want one?
Oh, I've got my own, but okay.
Actually, I want to be a writer. Jack Kerouac. You know him?
No.
Ginsberg, Burroughs, Benigetti, T.C. Corso.
Sorry.
'50s. The Beat Generation. No? Well, I like all those guys, so anyway, I'm just drifting for a while.
Oh.
Looking for a novel to write, I guess.
Have you found one?
Nope. I keep journal. I write everything down. I figure if I do it enough, I'll know what to write someday.
Makes sense.
I guess.
What about your father?
What?
You mentioned your mother and your sisters and everyone.
Oh, yeah. He died. So, listen. It was okay, your reunion? It went all right?
Oh, yeah. It was great. I told her all about myself. I'm a nurse's aide at Victoria Hospital in Thunder Bay, blah, blah, blah. All the way back to my first tooth. And she told me all about herself. And her husband was there. And he didn't seem to mind. I mean, a surprise and everything. All of a sudden, his wife has this grown-up daughter.
Right.
When she was out of the room, he told me that he'd known there'd been a baby. She told him just before they'd gotten married, so it wasn't a big surprise. Everything went really well. She wants me to come to their cottage. We leave at 5 this morning so we can see the sunrise and everything.
Oh.
Then we'll have the whole week together to just get to know each other. Just the two of us.
Sounds perfect to me.
Yeah. It is. Walker?
What?
I don't think she's my mother.
AP Cap. Okay. Stand out by the front door. 5 minutes.
I thought you drove a double shift. How come you're not in bed?
I'm not tired.
It's 2 a.m.
No, I'm still not tired. Where's Mr. Piatelli?
Well, he's supposed to be covering for you, but every time I give him a fare, he's got some reason why it's not a good idea to pick them up. You want a coffee?
No, thanks.
You know, when I call him, he says he's here or he's there, but I know exactly where he is. Sitting in Tim Horton's parking lot, reading the paper and eating donuts. What a stoop.
Is his cab? His business.
Yeah, down the toilet.
Krista, what do you think the chances are of me borrowing Mr. Piatelli's car?
Are you kidding? 1 in 1,000. That's not a car, Walker. That's a 1959 pink Cadillac, all original parts, polished within an inch of its life.
Yeah, well, what do you think he'd say?
No.
Oh, jeez. I need a car.
Why?
Well, because there's this girl.
This girl?
Yeah, I just met her. Like today?
Oh.
I think she might be in trouble. Well, she's probably not in trouble, but I just think, well, I need a car.
Oh, you do? Well, why? I thought you had a room.
What? No, I don't mean that. I mean, I might have to go somewhere.
Oh, well, go then, but you won't be going in Alfonso's car. I'm busy. I've got things to do.
The keys are in his office. I'm going to have to borrow them. I don't have any other choice.
Neither do I.
Pardon?
Nothing.
So anyway, I have to take it. Can you tell him?
When are you going to have it back?
9:10 in the morning.
I see.
I don't know how she could see. She was looking into the corner. She didn't turn around. Sat there motionless for a moment. Then she started thumbing through some invoices. I left. Krista. I don't know exactly what she expects. Sits in her wheelchair making wisecracks all night. One time we went next door to have breakfast together and she used her crutches. By the time we got back, she was really tired out, but she pretended she wasn't. Truth is, I'm afraid to show her how much I do like her because it's heavy. And I don't want to hurt her. But there's no use pretending. Krista and her wheelchair and her crutches and everything, that it isn't heavy. I thought about taking her out, but how would you go to a movie? And that blues club on Queen Street. It's 2 stories up. So I left. 5 after 5 in the morning, a gray Saab Turbo pulled up in front of the small hotel Julie was staying in on Lombard Street. Julie came out of the lobby carrying a suitcase and a flight bag. The trunk on the Saab sprung open, and then a tall, slim woman in rusty red corduroy pants and jacket got out of the car and embraced her. She helped Julie put her bags into the trunk. Then they got back into the car, pulled out onto Jarvis, heading south towards the Gardener. As they passed by me, I could see Julie's pale face through the window. She was smiling. She looked really hopeful and frightened all at the same time. Mrs. Layton circled around the city, then drove north on Highway 400. I followed her, staying back a safe distance. It was still dark. I didn't really know why I was following her, following Julie. As soon as she'd said that she didn't think that woman was her mother, then she'd immediately changed her mind. Of course she was her mother. It was just nerves. She was so nervous and tense. Everything was magnified 100 times. Her mother's smile wasn't as warm as she thought it would be. Her hugs, kisses not quite emotional enough. But that was unfair. After all, this was a daughter she hadn't seen in 20 years, perhaps only saw once briefly. She was expecting too much. It would take time. And yet, shouldn't there be something, some immediate recognition, an instinct? Yes, this is me, a part of me that I'm looking at. And back and forth she went, first taking one side, then the other, until she was exhausted, until there was nothing left for her to say. So for some reason, I leaned over the plates of lasagna and I kissed her. She smiled. She even laughed. And that was that. We didn't talk about it. I didn't tell her that I thought her first instinct around this Mrs. Layton sounded right to me.
and that getting up at 5 to drive north to see the sunrise seemed more than a little weird. So there I was, cruising along 1,000 yards behind the unsuspecting Julie, trying to stay inconspicuous in a pink Cadillac and wanting to protect her, but not knowing how or even from whom or why I felt that way in the first place. I was confused.
Oh, it's so beautiful. Smell the pine.
Yes. Great place, isn't it? Well, come on. Let's go inside.
The water's so still, peaceful, like glass.
Grab your bags. Here, I'll help you.
Shona, you don't have anything?
Oh, no. I leave a wardrobe up here. I'm up here all the time. Come on, dear, let's go in.
I want to show you the place. Didn't think it would be so big.
It started out as a log cabin, and people kept adding wings. Well, that's what David told me anyway. Come on, Julie, dear. Look inside.
It was light by the time they turned onto a rolling blacktop road and then into a narrow dirt laneway. I eased the Cadillac into the lane just in time to see the brake lights flash up ahead as the Saab eased slowly over the rocky brow of a hill. The laneway forked. I turned off, drove at right angles to them for a moment, then pulled the car up into a clump of birch trees, got out and half walked, half ran through the dew-wet grass and branches down the hill towards the lake. Now, I was hiding, soaked to the skin, behind a tree, sweating, panting, and watching Julie. Looking as happy as anything going into the cottage. I just stood there panting, steam coming out of my mouth. She was happy. I, on the other hand, was a fool. And then, a man appeared, walking along the path below me. He stopped for a moment, still in the trees, looking up the slope towards the cottage. He was a tall man, wearing coveralls, a duffel bag slung over his shoulder. Suddenly, he moved off the path down to the edge of the lake, circled below the cottage and then up another knoll and disappeared into a small guest cabin. And then I noticed the silence. No loons called out in the lake, no birds singing, no insects buzzing in the gloom of the woods. Just a heavy gray silence, as if all of nature was holding its breath, as if something terrible had happened and the shock was still rippling through the moist, thick air.
This is my favorite time of day. I always walk along the lake in the morning. If I miss it, then the rest of the day, it just seems off somehow.
I don't know how much sun we're going to see. It's misty.
We'll walk down as far as the point. The sun will burn it off, and then it'll be spectacular. You'll see.
I still can't believe I'm here. I mean, with you.
I know, dear. Same here. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, you sure lucked in, eh?
What do you mean?
Oh, such a nice cottage and your house, and to have a husband like Mr. Lake, like David, who owns his own business and everything.
Yes, I suppose so.
You deserve it. I mean, he's lucky, too. I'm just happy for you.
Well, I am lucky. I'm especially lucky now.
Me, too. What do you want? Should I keep calling you Shona or Mom or... I mean, it doesn't matter to me, but just so I know.
Mom, of course.
Okay.
Well, let's get going then. Oh, no.
What's the matter?
Oh, I forgot my camera. I want to take some pictures of you. I'll run back. You go on. Just follow the path.
I can go back.
No, and it'll only take me a second. You walk on. It goes right along the lake. I'll catch up to you before you've gone very far.
Well, okay.
No, you go on. I'll catch up.
Julie hesitated for a moment, a kind of puzzled expression on her face as she watched the other woman hurry back towards the cottage. And then she turned and walked right below me along the dirt path, looking down at the water glistening darkly below her, and then disappeared among the trees. A game. Some terrible game was in play, but what was it? The answer seemed to be close to me, in the mist itself, some shape, some face, just out of reach. The willowy, tall woman climbed the steps of the cottage and went inside. A moment, and then the man in the coverall came out of the guest cabin and hurried up the slope. Now I could see the woman again, standing just inside the door of the cottage, waiting for him. She opened it, and he rushed inside. Two players playing what? I wasn't sure what to do. I knew I had Julie somewhere safely behind my back. If I could just see something, overhear a conversation, pick up just one missing piece, then the game would be clear.
I began to creep along the edge of the path, reaching the clearing, then began to circle up the slope behind a screen of trees. They came out of the cottage together, running hand in hand, the man now dressed in a business suit carrying the duffel bag. They passed the gray Saab and got into a Volvo station wagon that was pulled up behind the cottage. The motor roared to life. Backed out. The car bumped up the rocky hill and over the brow, and the two of them disappeared. Now only the cottage, the gray Saab sitting there, and silence again. A profound ringing silence and games. Husband and wife games? Or lovers? And I knew. I ran. Ran back down the dirt path, almost flying through the shadows and over the knolls, running to catch Julie, running before it was too late.
Julie! Julie, stop!
The path twisted down right to the edge of the lake, crossed a little clearing by a pebbly beach, and there, on the other side of the clearing, against a wall of dark trees, I saw Julie. She was kneeling, looking towards me, her face absolutely white. I stopped. When she raised her hands up, I could see that they were glistening with blood.
Walker, how did you...
I walked towards her, feeling useless, late, always late. On the path, lying half in the grass and half out, was a middle-aged woman in track pants, a jacket, and running shoes. Julie was cradling the woman's head in her lap. Blood oozed out of the ragged wounds in her scalp, her matted, torn hair.
I was just coming along, and she was here. I didn't know what to do, Walker. I think she's dead.
I knelt down beside Julie, and there was a question, a horrible question, beginning to take shape in her face. I felt under the woman's chin, no pulse. Her eyes were open, staring at nothing now. Great, dark, luminous eyes.
Walker, oh my God, who is she?
Want more coffee?
No. Do you?
No. If I drink any more, I'll get hyper.
Geez, that'd be a change, wouldn't it?
Ha. So, what's going on, Walker? Am I supposed to make you feel better?
What?
That Julie Swenson business. Ever since that happened, you've been on such a downer. So I'm just wondering, is that why you invited me to breakfast? Am I supposed to be comic relief?
What? God, you say stupid things sometimes.
Just wondering.
Besides, I've invited you to breakfast before.
Once. Anyway, it was awful. I don't care. And I wouldn't mind seeing you smile again. It's just... I'm tired of being everybody's sidekick, okay?
Sure.
Sometimes I feel like I'm talking to a wall when I talk to you, Walker.
And vice versa.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Jeez.
Jeez is right. So, what happens anyway? I mean to her.
They're sending her home tomorrow, flying her back courtesy of the police department. She'll have to come back here a few times, of course, before it's all over.
Do they have a good case?
Oh, yeah. Husband and girlfriend want to do in wife to avoid losing property and money in a divorce settlement, but don't know how to go about masterminding the crime. Then, out of the blue, a girl writes to say she's looking for her birth mother, the man's wife. But the wife never sees the letter. The husband intercepts it. Now they have the perfect dupe. His girlfriend pretends to be the birth mother. The real mother goes up to spend some time at the cottage, as she always does in the fall. Goes on her routine 6 o'clock morning walk around the lake. The husband kills her, leaving the girl. Julie, to find her real mother on the pathway. Dead.
Nice people.
Yeah.
But Walker, wouldn't she just tell the police what she knew?
Who would believe her? She did just as they wanted. She was covered in her mother's blood. They had hidden the murder weapon. An old hatchet wrapped in a piece of Julie's clothing, along with a pair of small bloody gloves, up on a rafter in the cottage. And she was alone with her mother, as far as anyone knew. If the night clerk at the hotel had seen her being picked up by a gray Saab, well, all the better. The gray Saab was still there, and... Julie, well, obviously she was deranged. Handed from one foster home to another, probably abused along the way, found her birth mother and then, for some unaccountable reason, flew into a blind rage and killed her. Whatever corroborative evidence the police would need, the husband would certainly be pleased to provide.
and then there would have been notes a certain social worker would have had on Julie, too. They might even have pulled it off.
Except she was lucky enough to get into the right cab with the right cab driver.
I guess.
Who can't resist a pretty face? Well, guess I should go.
Yeah.
Thank you, Walker. Thank you for...
It's okay, I know.
What do you know?
I mean, what you're going through.
I didn't even have a chance to... How will I ever forget what I saw?
I don't know. Time? That's what they said to me anyway.
What do you mean?
Nothing.
No, what do you mean they said to you?
Just... When my father died, you know.
Oh.
So anyway, you'll call me when you come back?
Of course I will. What would I do without you? I'll be okay. I'm determined. I will be okay. Goodbye, Walker.
She kissed me. A quick, fast kiss, her eyes still frightened like a deer caught in a headlight. And then she turned and walked away, looking back once. My arms jerked up to wave like some crazed robot. She smiled and disappeared. I stood there for a long moment. Then I walked back to my cab.
Walker, where are you?
Coming in from the airport.
Did you see her off?
Yeah.
She'll be back.
Yeah.
So, what's the matter?
Just old stuff. They brought back old stuff.
Like what?
Like my father. We were out at our camp fishing, and it was like at night, and I woke up and he wasn't there. So I got up and I started to shiver. I don't know why. I just stood there shivering for a while. And then I went to the door. And then I heard my old man. He killed himself. Difference between driving cab at night and during the day. Julie Swenson. Half of me's glad I met her. The other half, well, I'd just as soon have passed. Anyway, I'm doing all right. I've got my room over Durang's Pawn Shop on Church Street. Still driving cab for Mr. Piattelli, even though I keep stealing his Cadillac, or so he says. And I still roll my own cigarettes. Maybe I will ask Krista out.
You have just heard episode 4 of Midnight Cab, The Mystery of the Motherless Child, written by the series creator James W. Nichol. Featured in the cast were David Ferry as Walker and Jacqueline Samuda as Krista, with Suzanne Bellanger as Julie and Carol Galloway as Shona. Music for the series is composed by Milan Kimlicka, and the casting consultant is Linda Grierson. The recording engineer is Joanne Anka, with sound effects by Matt Wilcott. The production assistant is Nancy Dow. Midnight Cab is produced and directed in Toronto by Bill Howell.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.